All right, guys, welcome back. This is episode 12 of the Creative Genius Podcast. Last week, as you may know, I was out on some travels. I made it back safe after a wedding, and I think the boys did some discussing of culture, which I know nothing of, and they didn't mention the one thing I put into the intro for last week, which was it was International Podcast Day on the day we recorded. Thanks for mentioning that in my absence, guys.
To be fair, it was not International Podcast Day on the day we recorded, because we recorded a day late, so it was International Podcast Day the day before. But when people listen to this, it will have been a month since International Podcast Day.
This is very true. Yeah, we do tape delay some stuff, so yeah, that would be true. And it still pains me, but for that you didn't even mention it. But hey, I'll get over it, I guess, in time.
Hey, you'll see in the outline today, I put last week and then was, and then you still had your International Podcast Day. Like, we didn't remove it from this week's outline, you know, it's still there.
There's just so much crossing out and red tape. I can't handle it.
Yeah. I mean, you can take it one of two ways. Either we actively, you know, updated the outline last time for your intro, or that we just completely neglected to update the outline for this week.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'll kind of meet you with a little bit of a compromise, I guess, there. Anyway, moving on to follow up.
Happy International Podcast Day a month ago.
Happy International Podcast Day at the last month.
Thank you. Follow up. So I'm not sure who I think it was. Adam dropped a note about mining cryptocurrency in a little bit of follow up from 2 weeks ago now. In terms of advertising, what's this all about?
So, yeah, we talked about it a little bit last time, but that quickly devolved into our pop culture talk, which was just, oh, so much fun. This is actually boring talking about it now. So we talked about advertising in the real show before, and kind of like, what's the next step in advertising? Like, how will we like to see advertising change, or how does it evolve with these things? So something that I came across, I think the day after we recorded that episode, was that a certain website, namely thepiratebay.com or .org, whatever they go by these days, they were using basically a script in place of ads that would use idle cores or idle section parts of your CPU to mine the Monero coin, which is a form of cryptocurrency. So basically, instead of serving ads, they would just use whatever, you know, free computing cycles on your computer there were to mine this currency. And in mining that currency, it would basically replace their existing ad revenue that they would get from putting ads on pages. So kind of throwing that in there, I don't want to get into too much of a winded discussion, but like, that's just one of the ways that cryptocurrency and advertising, you know, two things that we've talked about in the last couple episodes, are kind of coming into play now. And it's interesting to see how that kind of played out and how other companies are actually thinking about that, and how the people who made the API for this script to, you know, like, mine this currency kind of backed out pretty quick and said, oh, no, we're not going to do that. Like, we need to make sure we pop user consent and do all this kind of stuff instead of, you know, just doing it in the background.
Very cool. Interesting. We talked about this. I mean, cryptocurrency is an incredibly complicated, like, thing to just wrap your mind around as it is, and obviously with that kind of thrown in there as well, it's getting really complicated. Like, I have a hard time following that entire idea, just wrapping my head around it. I don't know if you do, Jim.
Cryptocurrency is hard for me to wrap my mind around anyway. Ever since we brought this up, like, I've really been doing a lot of investigating in what it actually is and how it works and like why people are pumped about it. And the more I learn about it, it just kind of gets more and more interesting, but it also gets more and more complicated to me. So I'm still just trying to like conceptualize what cryptocurrency actually is, and then what it means to mine for a digital coin. Like, I don't know why this is one of those things where it's hard for me to wrap my mind around.
Yeah, so we'll definitely, I'm sure, explore in a future episode just all the intricacies of, you know, cryptocurrency and what all these things mean and the blockchain and, you know, that whole concept. Probably after, you know, we've had enough time to go through all the homework and like wrap our heads around, so to speak, the topic itself. But like I said, in follow-up, this is just one of the ways that advertising is kind of evolving, and just kind of funny how it comes out a day after we record the episode. You know, thanks, news.
Yeah, it's really interesting how coincidental that is. We actually had a coworker the other day that I was talking to. We were just having a friendly conversation about comics, and like within the hour, he got an advertisement for the very same comics that we were talking about on his Facebook feed. And I was just like, how does that even happen? Like all we were doing is talking about it, and he hadn't searched for any of that. It was just a conversation, and when he went on his break, it was there. And that was super, super weird and a little too coincidental. I don't know.
They know you're pregnant too.
They know. They absolutely know.
That is creepy. Ugh. God, still gives me the heebie-jeebies. Anyway, so moving on, we did have a little follow-up regarding disaster preparedness. I know we all kind of agreed we don't know anything about this at all. So I did a little research on the Red Cross website. I felt they were probably the most trusty source on just general disaster preparedness. But specifically, I think we were talking about earthquakes because, we all live in California. And in terms of disasters, that's what's relevant to us. But I will drop a couple links in the show notes about what they suggest you need. Long story short, I think pretty correct in terms of the amount of water you needed. I think I said 1 liter per person per day, which, if I recall correctly, was right. But there's definitely this kind of, it has a video on the page as well, but it kind of brought some light to me. It was like, as far as some of the other stuff that they talk about that you need, I would be definitely having some trouble. So I can say I've taken a little action on this, and I've started the process to build a little bit of one. I don't have much in the way of storage, but I've kind of got a few things from the good old Target to go ahead and put in a little box in my room that is in the bottom of my closet to keep things safe in case I needed something in an earthquake. But I also know Target probably knows them, you know, when we're going to be pregnant too, so I have to worry about that.
Well, now they know when the earthquake's going to happen, you know, based off of Lou's you know, spending habits. Also, they're going to know that you're now one of those disaster preppers, and then you're going to be getting coupons for, like, you know, an 8-month, you know, storage of Spaceman food, you know, or dehydrated, you know, whatever, and, you know, for the low price of $500, but that's, you know, 10% off. So be prepared for those coupons.
Can't wait for them. Definitely can't wait for them. All right, guys. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up follow-up. So going into this week's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about specifically the death of everything physical, or physically everything, whichever way you want to put that. But I think we're going to talk mostly with our normal sort of light or hue of things on technology. And so, What are your guys' thoughts in terms of, like, how has storage and storage management kind of changed over the years? Are you kind of for how things have changed? And especially, I mean, we've got a lot of types of storage here in the show outline. But are you guys, is there a little bit of sentiment towards any one that you preferred or you liked? Or are you, what are you guys' thoughts?
So you kind of scared me a little bit when you said the death of everything physical, or the death of physically everything. You mean physical storage and physical media, right?
Well, somebody did put at the very end of the outline, and I don't think it was myself, physical stores. So that would kind of be everything. I mean, at least maybe not my house, but most things. So we'll get to that. We'll get to that, but let's start with technology first.
So your question is, what do we prefer?
Yeah. So my question is kind of first. Obviously, we've got a lot of ways that storage management has changed over the years. And do you have any sort of preferences in terms of ways of storing your own personal stuff? And or do you have any pastimes that you miss, ways you used to be able to store stuff?
So. For all the people out there who may be younger than we are or older than we are, can we just kind of like start with the oldest and then broke on that and then move along the evolution table? like looking at each one and then procon each one of those. And then at the end, if you want me to choose which one it is, I can choose, but.
Sure, we can definitely do that. I'm going to say I don't know anything about the first one. I wasn't here on this earth. So Adam, how old are you? Are you old enough to remember punch cards or tape storage?
So, okay, come on, man. Like, just because it's older than you doesn't mean you don't know it exists, right? That's just... Lou?
Yeah, it's like BC, but before Lou, you know it's
like it's the, BL?
It's BL.
I think we're going to have to, like, you know, trademark that term. So this is, you know, 50 years BL, basically. So just going back to, you know, how computers kind of first came about, right? Like, we mentioned, you know, actually in last episode, in the bonus one, like, computers are just glorified calculators, and they only know how to add, right? So back in the day, everything used to be stored on punch cards, like programs and everything would be stored in punch cards. And that's how you would feed a set of instructions to a computer and you'd get your result back, you know, usually in a series of punch cards as well. Right. And then shortly after that, there was tape storage, magnetic tape storage. So that's like the OG physical storage. So I have here just like, hey, pros for that was magnetic tape is actually like really good long-term storage. Magnetic like tape reels of tape. It actually will last for a very, 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 very long time, which I'm sure is like what they had in mind when they were making this, right? They're like, hey, you know, we're making this cool thing. It's going to have all this data on it. Like, we probably want to keep this, you know, in a safe place forever, right? It's the same way they keep like movie reels and stuff like that, right? Which is a different, you know, material. But magnetic tape would just last forever. So that was like a big pro for that, but punch cards, those were, you know, very fragile, right? Like, you get a tear in one, or you accidentally put one more punch in the wrong place and boom, your program doesn't compile anymore and everything breaks and the entire warehouse that is a computer that you were trying to, you know, feed this instruction through is now useless. So I have the cons of just everything else, like long-term storage for magnetic tape reels, awesome. Everything else was just horrible. So for you young whippersnappers.
So tape storage, I mean, was it it's BL 50 years, so is it something that was extremely volatile towards magnets because it was magnetic on the tape? I mean, I know, you know, other types of storage like hard drives, you know, magnets could affect them too, but I would assume if it's just literal tape laying around, this was like extremely susceptible to being damaged by magnets, though.
Well, yeah, Lou, all the stuff that you love today is all just kind of a, you know, like you said, an evolution of what it used to be. So yeah, everything used to be stored on magnetic reels of storage. And even now, like, we'll get the hard drives in a little bit, right? But those are still magnetically charged sections of a disk, right? That you'll read over. So yeah, like, they were sensitive, right, to magnets, but you basically would put them in a giant, you know, metal, you know, reel or like a tin, right? You just put it in there. And then after you're done, you know, running or storing whatever you need to, put it in that tin, it would store forever, like in a bunker in the dark, like it would just sit there forever, right? With hard drives, you know, it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, there's a theoretical, you know, time limit to where the magnetic field will actually like drop low enough to not register as a bit anymore. So that section can be unreadable after a long, long, long period of time. But to be honest, it's more time than we'll ever need to pull anything off of these magnetic reels.
Got it. Okay, cool. Thanks for the education.
The history lesson? Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, let me just put for the record, I'm only 30, so like that's not old.
It's older than me. Older than me.
In the Lou-centric universe, Lou's like, time is based off of, you know, when I was born. When I was born, everything began, right?
Definitely. You should also go be a history professor of like computer science somewhere, because you know about the dinosaur ages. So moving on. So after punch cards and tape storage, we move to CDs and floppies. And this I saw a little bit of in my young wee days. What are your thoughts on those, Adam? I mean, I know this is probably still more your era than mine, but I know personally CDs were pretty sweet. I had a CD burner and later a DVD burner, and I mean, it was effective and pretty inexpensive storage for the time, and could store quite a lot for what the size of most drives were.
Okay, so you put CD and floppy in the same category. Now, I wouldn't have done that. I would have put floppies before that. And then CDs are something totally separate, right? Because that was the first, you know, floppies were the first reusable, you know, form of storage. Like, you could rewrite on a floppy, or you could use a floppy multiple times. But before that, like, real floppy floppies, like, did you guys ever use, like, actual floppy drives that weren't hard little disks that only copied a megabyte, but actual floppy?
Those are the ones that are, like, 8 inches, aren't they, or something? They're, like, really large.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think there was 8-inch and 5.5-inch. I don't remember, because I only used them in, like, grade school when we had our Macintosh computers, and I wanted to load up the Circus Math, you know, game that was on there, or Oregon Trail, you know?
The Oregon Trail.
Oh, dude, Oregon Trail. Oh, so good. So good.
And they have an emulator for, like, the Apple II version of Oregon Trail online. It's, like, just an open source, like, emulation of Oregon Trail. You can play it anytime. I used to play it in the break room at work.
That's pretty awesome.
We'll drop that in the show notes. I'll find it.
Okay, cool. So yeah, floppies. I've seen the 3.25-inch ones, and they actually they do still, I think, sell them somewhere on the internet, sadly. But the older school ones, the like 8-inch ones, I don't think I've even ever seen one of those, but I've seen pictures, so I know what they are.
Jim, have you ever used an actual true floppy disk?
I can't say that I have. I've used the floppy disk that looks like the save button in Microsoft Word, which is probably the earliest form of physical storage I've ever actually used.
Yeah, those things were great, actually, because you can get them in multiple colors, right? And they had the cool little labels that you could put on them, so you always had to, you know, write down like which one was which.
Yeah.
I just want to know, who was the dude that invented it, that made it the size of, like, your shirt pocket for, like, a businessman? Whoever that was, man, really smart dude. Really smart dude.
Wait, so you could carry around floppies in your shirt pocket?
Yeah, I mean, it's the modern-day version. Well, I shouldn't say that. The modern-day version of this is, like, the flash drive. You know, people put them on, like, keychains, and, well, I mean, they were, like, 5 years ago. We've since moved on. But, I mean, it was. People used to walk around and have one. You know, I remember, like, when I was in grade school, like, I had a teacher that actually had one in his shirt pocket, like, most of the time. It was really weird to me, but, I mean, because I didn't understand what was on it, but I was a wee young one.
Yeah, so I guess a pro con of floppy drives is they were definitely cheap. They still kind of ran on the same magnetic form of storage, so they would hold for a while. And then they didn't hold that much, right? Floppy drives, at least. I don't know what other cons there would be. I guess they were cheap, right? Like, you could get them, tons of them, in bulk.
Yeah, you could get tons of them. I mean, this was the CD and floppy remind me a lot of the fact that they were so cheap that people would, like, be like, oh, okay, I need to, you know, put a ton of files on this, and they just, like, whip out a stack. You know, you'd go down to store and buy, like, you know, 10 or 20 or, you know, however many you needed. Later CDs, you could buy them in, like, groups of 100. But, you know, that was really nice. But then you had all these, like, individual items laying around, which kind of sucked. But that's kind of segueing into the next topic, which is, you know, like, hard drives. Hard drives kind of solved a lot of that actual have a bunch of these items and kind of brought it into one solid piece.
Well, you can't skip CDs. I mean, we have to go back to CDs.
Okay.
We have to go back to CDs.
All right, pros and cons of CDs.
CDs were just so great.
You loved them?
Well, I loved music CDs, right? I can remember burning, you know, mixes, right? Like, I kind of missed the tape era, right? Like, that was a little little before my time, little BA, you know, before Adam. But CDs kind of came, like, just at the right time, right? Like, where, Lou, you said you had a CD burner, right? Where you would just throw a bunch of stuff onto this CD. And I would always just make, you know, different mixes, you know, just for the car or for CD players, you know, Walkmans, whatever you want to call them. But yeah, man, like, I have to say CDs were my favorite form of removable and like just cheap forms of storage. But those things were so fragile. Whenever you scratch a CD, it was like the worst thing. And even ones like you bought a new CD and then you would scratch it. I know, Jim, you only seem to do like vinyl, right? So this is kind of like out of your realm, but.
No, it was the worst when I scratched a CD because I have a large CD collection. I mean, I have a lot of vinyl, but what's weird about vinyl is it's between CDs is vinyl's not exactly portable. And so I didn't have a chance to like toss it in my seat of my car. I didn't have a chance to carry it around to my friend's house. You know, like my vinyl was stationary. Like it stayed at home. I took it in and out of its sleeve. And that's where it lived. But with CDs, they lived with me on the go. And so they had a much higher likelihood of getting damaged and not working in my CD Walkman and so forth.
And then they had the mini CDs that you could fit in your shirt pockets. You could still carry one of those around if you wanted to.
Oh my God, I totally forgot about those things. And they had the like mini DVDs for like camcorders. That was like totally a thing for a little while. And you'd have to...
For GameCube, man. Like that was the de facto like storage for Nintendo. That was the first time they switched to like optical media, right? And it was these little mini, you know, DVDs. And oh, that was so great.
Yeah, I remember that. And I remember if you had like one of the little like Sony cameras back when, you know, we actually filmed with a proper camera rather than the one in our phone usually, the DVD would be super small and you'd have to put it in like a converter DVD to either play it in like a, you know, proper, you know, set-top box, or you would have to, you know, your box would have like a little smaller section. You drop that little tiny disc in there. Remember, they would get stuck in things. Oh, it was a nightmare. All right, so are we good, Adam?
I'm good with CDs. It was a different form of media, right? It was, you know, you'd burn an optical image onto this disc, right, in lanes, and it would just spin up and read that waveform as fast as it could and interpret that as bits, or in music cases as, you know, as analog waveforms, and then convert that into analog.
Do you want to reminisce on skip protection for a second?
So yeah, oh, actually kind of do. because yeah, the first CD player I ever got, I remember because I got it for Christmas and I got two CDs with it. I got the Mortal Kombat soundtrack from the movie Mortal Kombat from the 90s.
Yes.
And I got Peter Gabriel, I think was the other one. Like, of all the things to get, right? Two totally different things. But I can remember, you know, having that and then being in my room and like, they had the little like viewfinder too, so you could watch the CD spin up. And it was so cool because the Mortal Kombat one was black and it had like, you know, just kind of silver lettering on it for the labels. So when you see that one spin up, it kind of be like this cool, like gray metallic kind of like flashing. And the Peter Gabriel one was just purple, right? Or fuchsia or some color like that. So you put that in there and like, it was pretty much a solid color. So it would spin and do nothing fancy, you know, but I remember like before skip protection, right? Like, yeah, you'd tap on something and the disc is spinning, but the little laser that's reading it, you know, it doesn't have any mechanism to kind of move whenever something like wobbles or moves off rotation. So skips were the worst because you'd be listening to something like rocking out. And then as soon as you move your body too much, if you were holding the CD player, like audio cuts out, you wait a little bit and then boom, you're 5 seconds ahead in the song once it catches up. But skip protection, right, where they basically made that platter with the CD and with the laser that would read everything, that optical eye, they made that whole thing move, right? So it had a tolerance, like a wobble tolerance, where both of them would move at the same rate. So you could, you know, theoretically like smack this thing a couple times, and as long as it wasn't enough to like throw off the threshold, your music wouldn't skip. And yeah, like I'll reminisce about that because like way to, you know, find a way to solve a stupid problem.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I definitely enjoyed it. I had a Sony Walkman that was a CD player that had like a solid, I think 8 or 10 seconds of skip protection. And that thing was amazing, especially because, I mean, we were all young enough that we were kids. So we were the bozos that were probably what skip protection was designed for more than anybody, because we were walking around. I mean, adults were probably a little more civilized unless they were like exercising and like sitting somewhere listening to stuff, where we were, at least me, I was like on a playground or, you know, running around somewhere. And so, yeah, skip protection was a dream.
So yeah, yours is even better, right? Because like that skip protection that I was talking about, you know, it only worked for, you know, minor bumps in here and there, right? What you're talking about is like actual like read ahead skip protection.
Yeah, it was like buffering it into like a swap memory, you know, that was gonna constantly be reloaded back into. So that was awesome.
Didn't those ones have like the meter too that would tell you like how much of that you had used? I thought that there was a feature where like it would be like, okay, like we have this much read ahead in the skip protection, and then if you hit it a couple times, it'd drop a bar, or I think the other way would like fill up a bar or something like that, right?
Yeah, it definitely would.
Oh, that's so funny.
Anyway, all right, cool. So let's move on. Hard drives. So, you know, pros and cons of hard drives. What are your thoughts, Jim? I think this is like finally your heir. You're the youngest here, so
we're finally here.
Jim got to fall asleep for the first, you know, like 30 minutes while we talked about stuff that he never had to use.
Well, I had skip protection. You know, I was around for that, riding on my bike with angst and my skateboard with my Blink-182 in my ears and some 41. You know.
Oh, yes. Blink-182. Oh,
good. Yeah. And with my skip protection, you know.
I thought you were going to say, oh, yes, some 41. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Hey, they're good, too. They're good, too.
Past tense, they were good.
Yeah, it's a problem. They've died in recent years, which is too bad.
Lou, I'm proud of you. You got a pop culture reference. Like, shows that you listen to music.
Way to go, Lou.
Yep. He's just shocked.
Cool. Thanks. I'm glad I like got an A+ in Blink 182 pop culture. So pros and cons. I mean, I'm gonna sit back for a second because I know Adam's gonna probably berate me on my hard drive storage.
So some pros of hard drives, you know, obviously they're inexpensive, and you get a lot of storage. I mean, it's you can get tons and tons of space to save all of the media you could ever want on those things. I've never really had too many problems with hard drives. I personally never actually had one fail on me, but I know a lot of people who have had them fail on them. And something that I always dealt with my computers is, I was always very careful about moving them while they were on, like my laptops. Because if the thing about a hard drive is when it, you know, it's spinning and it has a little needle on there that it reads things. And if those disks or that needle, moves too far within that, in that compact space, it could damage the disks that are inside and potentially corrupt your data. So you really have to be careful. Like, you have to turn off your computer first and then move it if you want to go somewhere. And I was always very conscious of that because computers were very expensive for a young Jimmy. And so I was always very, very conscious of how I treated that computer, because I could just hear that hard drive spinning. And I was like, well, if that thing breaks, that's a real problem for me. So they're pretty fragile, I guess would be a con there. And yeah, I don't know. That was really my first step into like real storage. Like, I mean, CDs were kind of there for me a little bit, but I quickly moved into hard drive technology.
Yeah, so it's kind of scary because you figure that things, you know, the slower hard drives nowadays, right, traditional ones, moving at 5,400 RPMs. Fastest ones are moving at 7,200 RPMs. They have like SCSI drives that will spin at 10K, right? And the tolerance between most platters these days is, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, less than a dust particle, and way less than like a human hair.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely sounds right. I know it's like, I knew it to be like on the order of a human hair, but it could be smaller than that, and I just don't know.
Yeah, so I'm trying to find like what CDs span at, because did you ever remember like when Mythbusters did the thing where they spun up a CD to the point where it like shattered?
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to see that video again. And what does 52X mean? I'm going to look it up. Keep talking about this stuff. Hard drives are great. They let you hold tons of stuff. Lou's a hoarder, has way too much stuff on his hard drive, needs to clean out. But the problem is that they keep giving him bigger houses for the same money. And then he's like, well, okay, I'll just buy another house and, you know, like, move into this house. Yeah. So Lou's a hoarder. Lou, talk about RAID.
So Well, let me first talk about pros and cons. I'll get into RAID in just a second. So I do like hard drives. Hard drives are great. They are, like Adam said, I mean, it's kind of like chaos inside a hard drive. We started with like 5,400 RPMs, and even before that, there was like 4,800 and like some really weird speeds that were very slow. But 54 was kind of like the dominant winner. And then we graduated to 72, but 7,200 RPM drives were, you know, every time it spins faster, you're expecting this piece of hardware that has like super, super tight tolerances to spin faster and not fail and not have a problem. And so I think, you know, it's interesting that occasionally you get up to even 10,000 RPM drives and you're expecting this thing to operate. And it's just at some point they're going to fail. So they have, I think one of the biggest things is a fail tolerance. And so it's sometimes higher than others. And so one thing I did put in the outline that I will drop in the show notes is failure stats for some drives, which I use an online backup service called Backblaze. And they have a really interesting report because they have, to buy lots and lots of drives in the form of like petabytes. They actually release a quarterly report of like the most current drives they're using across a bunch of different manufacturers and which ones are failing. And sometimes I listen to their like webinar on which ones are failing, but it's really interesting to kind of see that and to see, you know, how a lot of times drives that are storing things in odd numbers, early on in the, you know, we were seeing like 1 terabyte was stable, but like 3 terabyte wasn't very stable. 5 terabyte wasn't very stable, but the 2s and 4s and 8s seem to be a little more stable, which is interesting. So I do find that all kind of I geek out a little bit on that stuff. Adam, I know you asked me to talk a little bit about RAID. I've done RAID a little bit myself. I'm not super up to speed on it because I was doing I've done Synology and Jarobo's version of RAID, and they both have versions that are kind of, I think, more along the lines of like class 5, where there's like single redundancy of one drive. So if you basically compare a bunch of hard drives together, it will back up some of the information on drive 1 onto drive 2, so that way if drive 1 fails, you can rebuild drive 1 by just putting in a new empty one. And that's like super cool. It's just it gets costly, and but it allows you to do cheap storage and protect yourself against the failures. And I've mostly just used the things that have been built by both Synology and Jarobo to kind of handle that on its own. But I know there are other forms of RAID too. I think we're at RAID 0, and there's a bunch of others too, like striping and mirroring and all sorts of stuff, which I really haven't gotten into. Adam, you could probably add more light to that.
Yeah, so like any numbering scheme, you start at the bottom and kind of move your way up, right? So RAID 0, which I believe is the first form of RAID, would just combine two hard drives together and treat it as one drive. And when it would write bits, it would, you know, the software RAID, or if you were more expensive, the RAID controller would tell it which drive to write those bytes to. But as far as, you know, the operating system was concerned, there was only one logical volume, even though there were two physical drives. So with that, it's great because you could take, you know, two drives and, you know, double your storage immediately, which had a bunch of, you know, really great benefits. A, you know, it was a cheaper way to get more storage. B, it was fast because now you have twice the bandwidth to write this, you know. Most modern RAID controllers are built on PCIe, right, which has a large amount of bandwidth and throughput to go through. And now you're writing, you're not depending on, you know, the latency of the drive. Or waiting for the write speed of the drive, that's not your bottleneck right now. You've kind of increased that bottleneck twofold. The bad thing is that once one drive dies, the whole logical volume is useless because the RAID controller knew where to put the data at the time and it knew where to read the data from, but it couldn't rebuild that data, right? So that was one of the cons to RAID 0. Moving up the scale, RAID 1, this is like a history in RAID. This is going to be really boring for people who already know what RAID is, so I'm sorry. But RAID 1 was mirroring of drives, where basically you could take two drives, and then everything you wrote to one drive would immediately get written to another drive, which was great for like kind of failover scenarios, right? Like on mission-critical applications, right? You always want the data in two places in case something happened to one drive. And if something happened to one drive, it's like, okay, you take that drive out, you know, you put the, you know, boot off the other drive, and you're fine. But RAID 1 is slower because you have to do two writes now. The same data has to get written to one drive and then the other drive. And it wasn't really necessarily a form of backup, because if you deleted everything on one drive, the RAID, you know, would be like, okay, cool, we're deleting all these files. We'll delete them on the other, you know, drive too. So people think RAID 1 is backup. RAID 1 does not equal backup. RAID 3 is actually one I'm not familiar with, but I believe it was some form of distributed RAID, and I think I'll have to look this up. But I'm more familiar with RAID 5, like Lou said, which is distributed RAID, right, where you would have a group of hard drives, and a certain section of those hard drives would be used as a pool of data where it would write, you know, different pieces of data, and one of the drives would be used for parity. And that parities drive is responsible for, like, kind of keeping track of what data got written where. And if one of the drives failed, this parity drive could basically rebuild that drive. So what's really cool with that is, like, if you have, you know, this computer with this application that's running, you kind of got speed benefits of, you know, RAID 0, also with the parity aspects of RAID 1, right? So just kind of the evolution of RAID, things would just get better. So if one of the drives went out, you put throw a new drive in and it would fix it. And then there's, you know, a couple other RAID levels, but more popular nowadays is, like Lou said, either like RAID 01, RAID 10. And RAID 10 is basically like having a stripe, but having two sets of it. So a mirrored set of striped drives. So you think of a RAID 0 where there's two drives that are being used as one logical volume and having another set doing the exact same thing and mirroring those two. So you can get really, you know, high speeds out of RAID 0, and then you get a full mirror of that striping on another set of drives.
So that's kind of like RAID 1 and RAID 0 combined?
Yeah, that's why it's RAID 10.
Ah, okay. It all makes sense now.
Right? Like, they actually knew what they were doing.
Crazy. They planned it. That's cool.
Your history in RAID brought to you by someone who only knows a little bit about RAID.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you. Cool. So, Adam, do you have any more on pros and cons of hard drives, or are we on to more in the way of storage?
I think you guys hit all the major points, right? Like, I think it's worth noting that still today, you know, most of the large amounts of storage that we have are based off of hard drives. Like, we're still kind of living in that era, moving on to kind of probably the next phase. But like Lou said, you know, he uses a service where they're primarily their business is run off of these hard drives. Like, this kind of form of media has lasted a very long time. But yeah, it's the only thing I find concerning is the failure rates, right? They are fragile pieces of equipment. And like you said, it's kind of magic how everything just seems to work, considering how these things have to be made and how they have to be, you know, assembled and everything. But it's kind of funny. I was looking at the failure status for this year for Backblaze, and just it's always fun, like, looking at manufacturers and seeing, like, which ones drives fail a lot or which, like, configurations do, right? Because, like, sometimes, like, oh, 4 terabytes this year were solid, right? But a 5 terabyte, like, ooh, no, right? Or when they moved down, I can't remember if it was like the 2 to 4 terabyte jump, but basically where they started making 2 terabytes on a different number of platters because they made the platters more dense so you could fit more information on one platter. So you basically decrease the number of platters that you would need for a 2 terabyte drive. And I think when they did that, like, failure rates dropped, like, dramatically because, you know, you remove a platter, that's one other thing that could not go wrong, right? Or one less thing that could go wrong. I think it was interesting to see those.
Yeah, and you've totally seen this. Like, if you've ever worked on electronics, which I know most of us have, if you've, like, looked at a desktop hard drive in the last, you know, 5 years or something, and you go back and you look at, like, a 1 terabyte desktop hard drive, and then you look at a 1 terabyte today, I mean, the thing looks like it went on a, you know, serious diet. It's a lot thinner in terms of that, and that's all those platters and the density inside changing. It's crazy.
Jazzercise for storage.
Oh boy. Okay, so moving on. Today, we are really kind of in the mecca, it seems like, of flash storage. Obviously, it's got some really cool pros, but the one big con that comes to mind right away is expense. But what are the pros on this side, boys?
Gosh, it's so fast. I mean, in every aspect, right? Like, I mean, the computer can just go grab the information as it needs it. It doesn't have to wait for the information to come to it. It's really efficient at categorizing all that stuff. I don't know. I mean, it's just all around just an upgraded form of storage. It's just fast. There's no moving parts either. So since there's no moving parts, there's a lot better failure rate. Like these things just don't fail unless the circuits between them decide to go bad, which is not something that happens, you know. And really, it's not even the storage that fails, it's other aspects of the computer that try to access that storage that fail. And so it's kind of incredible to me that how resilient it actually is, and how robust this flash storage is. So I really like it. I think it's worth the expense. And I think as time goes on, it's only going to get less expensive because it's going to become a more understood way of storage and a more understood way of how it interacts with the machine and stuff. So I think we'll find that it'll just get less expensive over time, just like how other things were expensive when they first started out.
Yeah, and that's kind of one thing we haven't talked about, right? Is like when you talk about a computer, like the largest bottleneck in every single scenario is the hard drive, right? It's how long does it take me to pull this file off of the drive and process it and spit it back, right? So when you talk about things like that, hard drives were notoriously slow for that, because if something's on a platter, the needle has to move down a platter and it has to find the sector and it has to read the sector and then it has to return that data to the person. And then the next thing they'll say is, okay, like, great, I have this, now I need this. And it's like, oh, crap, I got to go to this other sector and go find that and then pull that and then spit that back. It's like, okay, well, now I need something else, right? So when you hear the little drives and the needle's going like, right? It's amazing that they work. But that always took time, right? So that was the biggest bottleneck in performance of any computer. And flash storage is like, hey, you know that old model? Like, yeah, that doesn't exist anymore, right? Like, you can ask me where something is, and I can return it to you in the same amount of time every time with zero moving parts. And that just made everything super quick, right? When you talk about reading multiple files or reading large amounts of files, everything was just made faster with flash storage. But yeah, it's expensive. But we're kind of getting to the point where, like Jim said, the cost is kind of normalizing, and we still don't have the capacities for solid state that we do for hard drives, but we're at least kind of getting there.
Yeah, I mean, so the one thing that's really interesting to bring up in this area to me is, yes, it's expensive. I can agree with that, and I think that's the first thing everybody gets when they look at, you know, flash storage is just sticker shock. But the more interesting thing to me is how they've been able to make it more efficient. When it first came out, I mean, it was still extremely fast. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but I mean, I feel like most of the read writes were, you know, on the order of probably 10 times better or more maybe, and over hard drives. But the thing that's more interesting is that we keep seeing manufacturers come out and say, you know, this flash storage is twice as fast read write as the last year's flash storage, or, you know, 2 years ago's flash storage, which is just sort of mind-boggling to me that we are getting faster reads and writes. And I don't know if that is coming down to how the data is stored or the connection types or what's changing that. But that is something that I think is just fascinating, that we're able to actually read faster and faster as time's gone on.
Yeah, it's the controllers that have gotten faster, right? Like flash storage, you know, reading, you know, an electrical charge, you know, that's not difficult, but the way that it's controlling how it knows where the information is to look it up easier. The controllers are the thing I think that's getting faster. But yeah, like by orders of magnitude, right? It's like not like, oh, you know, 1.5% increase or 1.25, you know, increase in speed. No, it's like, oh yeah, it's 5 times faster now. You're like, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy to see like leaps that big. Now, the one thing we should mention is that in terms of failure, we've talked a little bit about failure. Failure is, you know, much less common with flash storage, but it still can happen. It can happen with any of these. And failure when a hard drive fails versus failure when flash storage fails is quite different, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so this I'm assuming you want to go down the data recovery path, right?
Yeah, I think it's worth just briefly mentioning, you know, like that with hard drives, data recovery is not always possible, but for all intents and purposes, if you've got a thick wallet, you could probably pay somebody to get it back.
Well, it's a cakewalk compared to flash storage.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, I mean, you still need a thick wallet with hard drives, but with flash storage, like you better prepare to have a very thick wallet, and you may not even get it back, you know, just because of how it's stored and the complexity to even recover it. And it's so new. It's a mess.
I think it's gotten better, like as the years have gone on. But I mean, if we talk about, like, it's worth mentioning, like, our logo is a hard drive, right? Our logo is a nice traditional, like, spinning disk hard drive with a needle and everything. And in that, right, like, if you have a needle that fails in a hard drive, like, that's awesome, right? Like, okay, cool, this needle failed. Or if the motor stops spinning, it's like, okay, that's great. You know, you can take apart this thing and put it a new motor in. Like, they were modular in the sense that you could repair them. The only problem with that is because, like we mentioned, the tolerance between these things is so tight that it's, you know, smaller than a dust particle or smaller than, you know, a human hair. You have to have a clean room to do it. But you could take out a platter and recover data off of it, right? If something had failed, you could essentially extract data. Now, with flash storage, where things are all electrically stored on chips, right? Like chips like we think of, like RAM, right? Like basically a lot of those chips, but just now non-volatile storage instead of volatile storage. So it persists, right? So this electrical charge, even after you shut off the machine, is still there, and that's what's holding your data. So with flash storage, you have to talk about, like, desoldering these chips from this board and soldering them onto another board and, you know, praying and hoping that you can, like, reconstruct these bits once you, you know, move them onto a new controller.
Yeah, it's the skill required and the tools required and the diligence is insane. And I mean, you mentioned, Adam, a little bit of the process to recover data off a hard drive. You know, you talked about the internal components, but I've even looked at this a little bit, but there's always a little controller chip on the outside of the drive. I'm in no way an engineer that understands, like, what exactly that's doing, but I've heard a good majority of the time you can, like, order that controller for your specific drive. And, you know, it's keeping track, I think, of things like smart status and other things, but a lot of times just that little logic board that's sort of attached to your main hard drive is what failed, and you can, with a couple screws, replace that and be back up and running. And lo and behold, you know, the drive didn't fail. The platters didn't fail most of the time. We don't have an issue that way. Occasionally, you have that spinning needle actually scratch a disk, and that can cause, you know, undue harm to the data itself. But even that is gotten better over the years. I mean, we didn't even mention sudden motion sensors on hard drives, you know, sort of the skip protection for hard drives. It's crazy.
Yeah, taking that skip protection, right? Like, everything's an evolution, right? Like, you can kind of see how things have gone up, right? So let's take that, right? So you have these disks now, right? Like optical media, but that are using magnetic charges instead of, you know, an optical laser to read things. So take you back to, like, magnetic tapes, take CDs, mix them in there, and now take skip protection and put that in as well. And then in hybrid, you know, hard drives now, right, where they have, like, hard drives that are, like, kind of like if flash storage and hard drive got funky together, and then their offspring, like, was kind of, how do I want to say this, a little bit of good traits from flash storage and a little bit of bad traits from, you know, hard drives, kind of a little bit of both. But yeah, they have this hybrid approach where now you've got skip protection with buffering, right, or a section that's, you know, flash storage that, you know, it will move this hard drive data onto to access. And I'm talking about, like, the all-in-one, you know, solutions for, like, hybrid drives, right? There are other, you know, solutions like actually having two separate drives and mating them in software, but they actually make a physical, like, all-in-one component, right, where all of that's done in one section. But you kind of see how things have just gradually kind of taken the best parts of each like tier or evolution step and kind of now merge them all together. So it'll be interesting to see what comes next, right?
Yeah, it definitely will. And I mean, I don't know what it looks like, but I know we definitely want to talk about the idea of the cloud and that being a possibility of where the future lies a little bit. And we're sort of living the beginning stages of that, it seems like, we aren't sure that that's going to be 100% the future, but you know, what are some of the benefits of cloud storage?
Cloud storage, for example, for me, I, with my machine, I decided not to invest a whole lot in local storage. And so most of my stuff is stored on the cloud. And a really big pro for that is if I don't have access to my personal machines, I can go on a different machine that is not mine and go access my information, which is super convenient, especially if I don't want to carry my stuff around. Not that I wouldn't want to, but I mean, if I don't, or if I happen to accidentally drop it in the ocean, then I can still access my stuff and it's not lost forever, which is just such a secure feeling, which I really like. So that's a big pro for me, is that I can get my access anywhere on almost any medium. I mean, phones and tablets have really, really come to the forefront of computing. Like they are computers, and they can, you know, the way that formatting has become is you can really get this information across platforms. And so that's been a really big pro for me as far as cloud storage. And I didn't have to invest as much money into my machine, so I can invest that same money into more RAM or a better processor and get a faster machine, and not have to have all of it there, you know, which has been really convenient as well. Not have it so cluttered.
Yeah. I mean, it is really interesting to see how storage has evolved. We kind of went from, you know, floppies and CDs that were just couldn't store a whole lot, and then hard drives and, you know, the unimaginable, like we're where we are today, you know, like 8 and 10 terabyte hard drives. And then you take a big step backwards, it seems like, where probably the average SSD sold today or flash storage sold today is 256 gigs is what I'm going to guess. Maybe 512 if we're lucky it's that big. But that's a fraction of what we had with hard drives. And the cloud offers the ability to store so much more, but it comes with some pretty big downsides in terms of cost. I mean, all that costs money at the end of the day, and someone's got to have the infrastructure set up to make that happen. But it's allowing us the ability to, even though at a fraction of the cost of owning, you know, a physical hard drive, to have smaller devices in hand. And so instead of buying a computer with a big hard drive and a phone with, you know, tons of storage and, you know, a bunch of individual items to sort of store all this stuff and silo it all into each device and, you know, sync it across manually. Now we have, you know, we pay one smaller fee for some sort of cloud service that just puts it everywhere, which is cool, but it definitely comes with the cost of fees.
Yeah, I think, you know, having to pay for storage, like that does come with a bunch of benefits, right? Namely the term, the redundancy, right? Basically, like Jim said, you can access your data from anywhere, and there's a copy of your data somewhere else, so it's always easy to get it. And I think, like we talked about, cost of, you know, drives and cost of this, cost of that. But I think now with cloud storage, right, you're seeming to get, you know, more space for cloud storage for a redundant form of your information, or like Jim said, a way to supplement your local storage and have stuff that you need be available everywhere, and then, like in Lou's case with Backblaze, have everything that you have in another place in case of disaster.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely peace of mind, I think, for all of us. In one way or another, I think we all use the cloud, and I'm just using the term the cloud there because I'm not sure who's using what, but you know, the one other con that comes to mind is we really don't have any control over that. I mean, you do have the ability to read the privacy policy and all that good stuff for whoever your, you know, chosen provider is. But at the end of the day, you're giving your data over to that person and you're trusting them to, you know, handle it, you know, with the privacy preserving, you know, things that are outlined in the privacy policy. And so you're hoping that one, they don't delete it. Two, they don't, you know, give it away to anybody else or sell it or, you know, monetize on it or anything. So, you know, it does come with definitely some downsides. But it definitely has upsides that I think most people agree right now are far outweighing the downsides.
I think what's funny is calling it the cloud is more of like a perception rather than a reality, because there is a warehouse full of hard drives somewhere where all my stuff is. And I just own, if you will, just kind of a cubby of all of those hard drives. So your stuff is still physically stored. It's just not stored on your local devices. So it's not like your stuff is just sitting in empty space. Like, there is a place where you have an assigned cubby with this company where you keep your stuff along with X amount of other people. So it's kind of funny how they use this perception to name what this thing actually is. And it's just, you're storing your stuff somewhere else. It's just like having a storage unit for all your extra stuff in your house.
Yeah, it's a way to like make it not so techie, right? Like, to kind of bring it down to a friendly, marketable term. When you said, oh, like cloud storage, you know, like it's everywhere. Like, oh, like clouds. Oh, yeah, okay. I can imagine the marketing meeting they had, you know, the first team that came up with, you know, cloud storage. And like, yeah, that sounds good. Oh, that really sounds good. Everyone else is like, you know, distributed data storage, you know, or like offsite hosting data storage. And like, people are like, wait, you store all my stuff in just a warehouse, you know, somewhere? Can I go to this warehouse and go inside? Oh, no, you can't go inside. What do you mean I can't go inside? My stuff's in there. Yeah, we don't give you the key, though. Like, you can go to this place and, like, request it. So, wait, I can't actually, like, just show up, ask for my stuff, and you won't give it to me? It's like, well, no, you file a request to have your stuff given to you, right? Like, can you imagine the paperwork? I just think of, like, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where, like, 18 forms have to be processed, you know, to get your one piece of data, you know, because you don't have full access to it.
I really like the way Ford reacts to just about everything.
Yeah, right? Did they fill out the grab the data from the data center storage form? No, they did not. Oh. Lou, lost on you? Yeah?
Yeah, dude, I'm way lost. But I think we should revisit my first question to you all, which was sort of, what's your favorite? What is it? We've gone over pros and cons for each. I know, Adam, you wanted to go over that. But what's your preferred method of storage currently?
Flash storage for the win.
I mostly use cloud storage, but I also use. If I had to like have local, it would be flash for sure. Just the sheer speed of it. It just makes everything so much faster. And that's what makes, you know, mobile devices, you know, so quick as well, that they, because that's all that they use. I mean, they don't really have a spinning disk in there. I mean, early stuff, you know, like iPods, like those had spinning discs in them. And I think the Zunes did as well. I believe that they also had spinning discs inside of them, but man, they were thick and they were slow. And so having that flash storage locally is quite nice. So flash storage for my applications and so forth, cloud stuff for my personal data is kind of my favorite combination of the way I store things.
All right, fair enough. So I'd have to say I'm kind of a mix of hard drive and flash storage. I still do like the benefits of hard drives being massive because I have large collections of data I put on them, and I do not have millions of dollars to spend on flash storage yet in the sizes that I need it. But flash storage is starting to be where I'm thinking, you know, I'm not too far off where I can probably put everything on flash storage. So cloud, I'm dabbling in it, but it's not my main place to store everything. So that pretty much summarizes, I think, our evolution of storage. But my next question is sort of, where do you think the future of physical media is from here? Where do we go from here in terms of we're kind of between the cloud, hard drives, and flash storage right now? But what's next steps look like?
So I think it's kind of worth noting, right? Like, we mentioned the cloud as being some abstract, you know, form of storage, which it is, but the cloud is still based off of physical media, right? Like, it still has to put the stuff somewhere, and the stuff that it's putting on is physical media. So in most cases, they're using, you know, forms of hard drives or arrays of hard drives, like we talked about RAID, right? So they have all this stuff, you know, set together, you know, RAIDed together, and it just puts all these bits on there and keeps it in separate cubbies, right? Like Jim was referring to, right? So, you know, you as a user have X amount of, you know, space on you know, in their cloud, and they're like, okay, well, we have this one server, you know, which has a set of hard drives in it, like traditional spinning hard drives, you know, that's all rated together to one logical volume, and you get this one little folder, you get this one little section of this drive. But then we also, you know, replicate this data. We have like a copy of it in, you know, Texas, or a copy in Colorado, or a copy in Vegas, or, you know, copies all over the place. Just so if one of those places goes off the map, right, like it would suck to not be able to get any of your cloud storage because the data center, you know, got burned down, or, you know, a natural disaster hit, or, like, you know, we have had all these hurricanes, all these earthquakes, you know, if something happened there and the building collapsed, right, then where's all your data? So they're moving that around. So I think when we talk about the future, right, the future is being able to access your data anywhere. I think that's where everything is going towards, right? That's most important to people. Like, when you weigh everything, is like, do I have enough space? Yes. Do I have all this stuff? I think once that converges and everyone has enough space, more space than they know what to do with, the next thing is like, okay, well, I have it here. I want to be able to access it anywhere, right? So then that's when cloud storage is going to kind of, you know, go hand in hand with physical storage. So I think the cloud will take over in that aspect. And if we look at physical, like, that's where it gets really interesting, right? Because the cloud is actually kind of boring when you think of it, right? Like Jim kind of pulled the curtain away on that. It's like, hey, you ready to see what your cloud storage is? And they pull back the curtain. It's just, you know, this giant warehouse, like, that's it. Like, that's what it is. But physical storage is getting really interesting, right? Like, you talk about what are all the different things that we can store data on? And your options there are almost limitless. Well, not limitless, but you have a lot of options. I mean, they're talking about even, you know, and Jim, I know you brought this up a bunch, like nature science, right? Like, DNA is kind of like the ultimate form of storage, right? Where that stores everything about a person, right? In one very, 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 very small, you know, section. So people are talking about, like, hey, like, when are we going to be able to store, you know, our own data bits, you know, not like, you know, characteristics, this and that. But when are we going to store ones and zeros, forms of data, onto DNA? And they've already, like, started working on this kind of stuff. And I was looking at it, like, as we were talking, and it's getting pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's actually it's Microsoft who has really started this. So I was actually going to bring that up. I'm really glad that you did. It's incredible. And what we're finding with this is it's not just DNA where we can put information, right? So getting maybe just a little bit off topic, and I'm sorry if this is too far off topic, but they're actually able to take virus shells and empty their RNA and put in desired DNA into it, which is just new genetic information, and they're actually able to use that as medicine. And so that is like...
Are you talking about CRISPR? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it is incredible. Like, this is... And this science is just beginning. Like, this, all of this storage stuff, like, it may sound like, you know, it's just for, like, saving, you know, your video of your cat when it ate too much peanut butter or whatever. But that's not what it's just about. Like,
wait, your cat ate too much peanut butter?
Well, yeah, it happened once and it was really funny and I took a video of it and it was great. So, like that's not what it's all about. Like, I mean, to take a virus shell and to emptying it of its RNA and not essentially kill the thing. I don't know how you kill a virus because they're not even living. But anyway, and you fill it with information that you desire to go in and fix potentially fatal genetic mutations in a fetus. Like, that is incredible. And that's literally taking binary and fixing stuff. Like, that's what DNA is. Like, it's almost binary. And so it's really not as complicated as we maybe have thought originally to dissect DNA. Like, it's four parts and you can rewrite it. And so if you can strip DNA of its original information and put whatever desired information you want in it, that just opens a whole new avenue of so much incredible stuff. And DNA is so amazing in the way that it compacts all of that information. Like, chromosomes and DNA is nuts. And what's really crazy about it too, sorry, I this is a really cool subject. So, like, let's say you're taking notes for, like, your English class, right? And you're writing it from left to right. And when you read those same notes from right to left, when you read it that way, it's notes for your math class and it's writing it simultaneously. And then if you take its volume, if you take its 3D shape, those notes are for your history class. And so it's
it's doing that all at one time, and then at and then on top of that, it's fact checking itself to make sure that it didn't make mistakes. And then if it does find a problem, it literally snips those issues, takes it out, and puts in the right information. And so if we can have storage that can fix itself, you know, forget about, you know, failure status. It won't fail. Like, it can repair itself because it's organic. So, I mean, if we can really unlock these secrets and really figure out how DNA has evolved to do all this crazy stuff, like, that's really going to be an incredible form of storage. And that's seriously going to revolutionize the way that we do so many things. I'm way excited about it.
Yeah, I think that that whole once you open up that door, right? And now they've kind of like stuck their foot in there to kind of like peek what's inside. Like, it's amazing what we could accomplish. You know, like, you talk about all these limits that have been put on, you know, computing, and like you said, you know, getting into, you know, actually like genetic modification and curing all of these diseases. There's a really good podcast, and I don't know if you've listened to it, or it's an episode where they talk about the scientist who discovered CRISPR and like wrote the, I believe the patent for it.
Right.
And basically all the ramifications that came about that, right? Because CRISPR was like you summed it up very, very nicely. How, you know, it's like, yeah, you can use this to just rewrite pieces of genetic information. So there's the good side of that, right? Which is, you know, curing all of these genetic diseases, right? Being able to, you know, basically eliminate, you know, any form of genetic illness that you would, you know, have. But then also, like, now you talk about designer babies, right? Like, you can get into that whole thing. It's like, okay, well, we could, you know, use CRISPR to genetically modify, you know, this and then this, or give us, you know, these enhanced abilities, or give us, you know, like the super soldier serum, you know, all of those types of things. So it's really interesting seeing how that line has been formed in this podcast, you know, talking to, you know, the founder, and she kind of goes through the timeline. It's like, well, when we found this, you know, it's like, wow, I can't believe this, you know, this works. This is kind of amazing. And then, you know, and then all these people are saying, oh yeah, we can use it to do this. And this is like, well, okay, slow down. We have to have like an ethics committee and all that kind of stuff on it, because you can go down some, you know, pretty dark roads pretty quick. But taking that, you know, something that small that has kind of opened everyone's eyes to like all of these possibilities, doing that same thing with storage, I think is fascinating, right? Being able to use something that we already have, right? That's already been designed, and being able to use that and bend that to our will is kind of, you know, an amazing thing. And I just think if we can get to that point with storage, like, every argument we have after that will be like, well, how do we improve this thing, you know, that we have? So I don't even know what's the future beyond the future, but DNA storage seems super interesting, and hey, we'll solve every problem that we have, you know, so hurry on that.
I mean, it's really incredible to me. I mean, and just kind of like a sidebar on this too is, you know, when we play video games, we're playing the best versions of what humans could possibly be, like, you know, heightened reflexes and better, more strength and more intelligence and a way to design something in your mind and actually bring it into the physical world, right? And so I feel like if we really did genetic engineering, and if we really did it and made designer people, we would be creating the video game versions of ourselves, and we would literally be superhuman. And that's like a real thing that could happen. Like, if you could write your genetic code in such a way that you could access more muscle fibers, or you could have more neural links in your brain and connect it to the internet, or whatever the case may be. And like, all of this starts with unraveling storage. That's where it all starts. Like, it blows my mind.
Yeah, it's like, we have the ultimate form of storage. We just have to deconstruct that to figure out how it works. And then once we can do that, if we can bend that to our will, problem solved.
Crazy. Crazy, crazy. And then it's like, what's beyond that? And what it makes me think is, you know, we have these like little universes that exist inside of us, right? And just to kind of put it in scale, like, your DNA is your entire ancestral history. Like, that is all of your epigenetics. That is your grandparents' genetics. That is your great cousin from, you know, the year 6. Like, it's all there. Like, the Neanderthals, like, it's all there. It didn't go away. It's there. And that all that information still exists. It doesn't just go away. You're just the next addition in that line. And that is just so much information. And to put it on the scale of how many people there are in the world, that's so much information. And then it's like, what can hold even more information, right? So it's, I don't know, it blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind.
Insert mind blown gif here.
Cool. Well, I actually can say I haven't heard of CRISPR is the name of this company, so I'm gonna have to read up on it a little bit. It sounds intriguing, at least.
Yeah, CRISPR is the name of the technology, and it's an abbreviation, I believe. I don't know the full abbreviation, but it's CRISPR.
Cool.
Is that right, Jim? Is that right?
That is correct.
Sweet. I knew since you're going to school, you'd be able to fact check me and be like, "No, old man, that's wrong." Like, kid, sit down. Just think of the good days when we had tape storage and just be quiet.
Well, Jim, if you can make sure we get a link to that in the show notes, that'd be awesome, just so we can reference that. So moving on a little bit here, I think it's important that we mention just a little bit around security.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about like security too much, right? Because like I think we hammer that to death, you know, in our privacy section, but I think it's worth like bullet pointing, so go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so I think it's interesting to point out, you know, I mean, traditional media, when we say traditional media, media you have access to at your home, you know, be it flash storage, hard drive, CD, floppy, punch cards. If you still have tape storage, you really need to work on your storage plans. But they really don't have much in the way of concerns of being compromised too much. I mean, There are things like, you know, software compromises and stuff like that, but in the long run, if you don't usually have physical access, you can't really do too much. Is that fair to say, guys?
Right.
I would say so. I think physical access trumps everything, right? Where if someone has access to your physical machine or your physical drive, they can do whatever they want, right? Like, you can throw encryption at stuff, yes, but if they have physical access to something, usually that's an end game.
Fair enough. And with the cloud, there's some additional risks of, you know, essentially, you know, once you go into security and you start to concern yourself with that, there's social engineering. There's, you know, everything's just kind of protected by a password. You have concerns about encryption. There's a lot of concerns that sort of come up there, and you have multiple touch points where things could be attacked from. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say like we kind of mentioned this, right, where you don't have control over the cloud storage, right? And you have to read their privacy policy to see how people are storing things or what they're doing, or if they offer you a way to kind of control how your data is accessed, right? Like Backblaze, for example, will let you know, use your own private key, right? So where you are the only person who has a key to that data, right? All they see is blobs on their servers, and they can measure, this is how big your blob is, and this is how much you paid for, so great, you know? But that blob means nothing to them unless they have your key. And encryption, I think, is another thing we should probably talk about, like, at length in another episode. But, you know, you having the keys to your data is kind of a big thing, and a lot of these services, right, your quote-unquote key is your password. And there's so many problems, you know, just today with passwords, right? Password reuse and, you know, like Lou mentioned, social engineering, you know, like phishing, you know, targeted phishing, spear phishing, all sorts of things that get you, like, once they get your credentials to the cloud, like that video you saved of a cat, you know, that ate too much peanut butter, or videos of your kids, or pictures of your family, stuff like that, that's now all accessible and stuff that you would normally not want, right? And in the olden days, before you had, you know, computers where you stored everything, you had in a photo album or in film or whatever, right? And that was in your house or in a locked storage vault or wherever it was. Now with the cloud, I think, like Lou said, there's too many attack points. Like, there's different ways that can be compromised. And we talked about, you know, like Equifax getting hacked through an exploit and just their software application, right? Where someone was able to punch a hole through and pull all this data off of their storage systems, right? So I think security, I didn't want to talk too much about it, and here I am, you know, like rambling on about it, but it's just something to keep in mind when we talk about like moving more storage out of our field of view, right? Like into this quote unquote cloud, we're just knowing kind of how that's being handled would be beneficial to all of us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair that we kind of mentioned it just briefly like that. So we should also kind of talk about, you know, when we started this topic, we said the death of physically everything. And I know you guys put in the notes or the outline here, you know, physical stores, locations. I'm curious, you know, to what degree you want to go down this, but obviously there is a kind of change of retail as we know it too.
Well, absolutely. You know, with this ability to be able to, you know, store more things in other places, you know, it kind of gets rid of that need for physical places to go to, right? I mean, malls are experiencing this, you know, with places like Amazon. You know, I mean, if I can pay for something and get it in 2 days, like I'm pretty okay with that. And I feel like most people are. It was the 5 to 7 business day wait day where you got your stuff. Like, you spent $100 on this thing, you don't see it for like 2 calendar weeks, and that was a little bit too much. So malls were still relevant because you could go in, pay for your stuff and leave. But now with this ability to have this really giant server to have all of this information for you to go look at your leisure and shop, really defeats the purpose of having the need of a physical store for people to go to. So you're just left with a warehouse full of stuff. You package it up and send it along in its way. And so in that sense, you know, we're seeing physical stores kind of becoming obsolete.
Yeah, I think it's we all know that the web kind of changed how we shop, right? And the first thing to go was like comparison shopping and, you know, trying before you buy, or, you know, doing research before you go in to buy a product, right? And mentioned retailers like Amazon, but like every storefront, you know, has an online presence. And like you said, being able to order something and have it shipped to me means I don't have to get my car. I don't have to go drive. I don't have to deal with people because I hate dealing with people. You know, it kind of takes all of those things out of the equation. And now it's gotten to a point where it's at such a mass scale that, you know, everyone is doing it to where it's now causing physical locations to need to shut down, right? Because their core business was either walk-in traffic or, you know, people coming every day. And as soon as someone was able to come online, invade their space, right? Especially like these niche stores. And Jim, I know you mentioned a couple episodes back where you would get like vinyl records through this this online service, right? Where you give them money and subscribe and they send you like a record. Like even that system, right? Where you talk about something that's very physical and very kind of intimate. And like I consider vinyl like a throwback to, you know, like the physical age of music and media. And it's really interesting to see now, right? Like how they've even taken that out of the equation. So I think the more and more we see these big businesses grow, they don't have a warehouse presence. They just have their online presence. So you're starting to see, you know, physical locations disappear, right? So that's why we say the death of physical everything, you know, like now even stores are going away because we've moved to kind of this cloud storage, right? It's where now these buildings going away, you know, where they would put a shopping mall, they're now putting a data center, right? To store more media.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it is crazy to see, you know, how online has really just changed the way we operate as a society. And, you know, I mean, I think about the number of packages, you know, big giants like Amazon are shipping on a daily basis. It's insane. And today, I mean, you buy even things like a mattress online, or, you know, the glasses that your reading glasses. It's kind of nuts. I know this is probably one of those moments where Adam's like, wow, you listen to too many podcasts, but I mean, it's totally true. There are people who I know who have bought mattresses online and never sat on them before they actually got it at their house.
Yeah. And I think, you know, of all the things, right? Like, okay, yeah, people buy cars online now, right? People buy mattresses online. People still buy physical things. But I mean, if you think about like people now buy groceries online, right? If you think about the one thing that you thought would never go away, like, oh, a grocery store, right? Like, people will still always have to get groceries, you know, they'll always have to go to a store to pick out groceries, and not anymore, right? Like, you talk about all these services coming out now where it's like you can order all your groceries and have them delivered to your house in a cooler. It's like the milkman, you know, but now doing everything delivery. And I think that's interesting, right? And taking that a step further, like you can pro con that. It's like you have services, you know, like here, I'll throw in a podcast, you know, common ad read, which is like Blue Apron, right? Where they have, you know, meals that they send prepackaged to you, and talk about how that's, you know, kind of impacted farming and how we, you know, sustainably grow crops and how we, you know, reduce our waste as a society because we're only selling, you know, prepackaged ingredients, you know, in small quantities and not, you know, throwing a bunch of stuff in mass to a grocery store and having a lot of it go bad and then, you know, just having to compost that and, you know, try to recycle that. I think it's really interesting how this whole concept of the cloud, for lack of a better term, right, is really taking away a lot more physical locations and it's having a much bigger impact on the physical kind of retail and space than we thought it did or would, I should say.
Yeah, and just mentioning, you know, something else we've talked about, you know, this has also greatly changed the banking institutions around the world. I mean, I think we mentioned this in our episode. Adam and I both use Sybil to bank, and there is not a bank. We don't walk into a bank ever to actually interact with anybody. It is all just you know, via an app and the cloud, and so it has revolutionized not just you know, groceries and you know, certain physical items, but even our financial systems.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, I think I even heard more recently that people are actually, you can actually do like home loans completely online, like all digital signing, everything. You never talk to a human being. You just applied for a home loan and got approved online, which is crazy. And I know, I think, Adam, you dropped this in the show notes here, that like voting is potentially a future, you know, thing that I know, at least in California, I think is not an option right now to vote online. But like that is not too far-fetched to think.
Yeah, it's something like it's definitely not voting. I put a question mark after it, right? Because it's like, wow, okay, like, is this the next step, right? How far can we take this, you know, death of physical thing, right? So we already have absentee voting, right? That's a thing. But when are they going to move to like an online voting? And because of security and, you know, all things important, especially when it comes to something like a, you know, an election for our country, right? Yeah, how do you secure that? How do you make sure that, you know, votes are tallied correctly? And we don't really have a digital identity right now, right? Like, we're all tied to a number right now, but there's nothing tying us to that online, right? Like, you use that number in a lot of different places, but there's no like central online identity you should have, right? And this would be something to where, like, when you're born, like, you're given a key, right? Like some encrypted hash or some private key, right? To your digital identity, and you're the only person who has that. And I think that's an interesting concept. That's something that would have to happen before we can move to like a true online voting system. But there's all sorts of, you know, regulations and stuff that have to go through that before it can happen. But I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, that other countries do some form of online voting.
I want to say you're correct. I wouldn't be able to tell you where. I feel like France might be on that train, but they also have a national voting day where basically the country takes a day off from work and goes and votes, which is funny because their lowest voting turnout would have been our highest voting turnout since 1888. So think about that for a minute.
Yeah, I know, right? Man, you know, sometimes I think we as Americans are very short-sighted and we only look at, you know, the successes that we've had, and we very much overlook the rest of, you know, the world and how it's moving and how it's changing. And yeah, we can learn a lot from other countries while still respecting our heritage, you know? Like, I don't want to say like, oh yeah, you know, we're horrible, you know, we're just so behind. But in a lot of aspects, like, we have some catching up to do, right? And we can take pride in our accomplishments. I don't think that's a bad thing to do, but I think it's also good to, you know, admit when you're behind and, you know, like, that you need to step it up and that you need to, like, take some lessons from other people, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Definitely. So I know, Adam, you put one other thing, I think, in the notes here, and again, a question mark after it. Physical self. What did you mean by this?
So yeah, I probably should have put like two question marks after this, or like just trailed like a bunch of question marks.
Seems appropriate.
Yeah, right. But yeah, so we talk about, you know, the physical world and how we perceive the physical world and how we ourselves are physical beings, right? And very much the desire of, you know, humanity has always been like, how can I, you know, accomplish everything? And if I can't accomplish everything, how can I get more time to accomplish more, right? I think that's a struggle that a lot of people face, especially people, you know, like Disney, like what was Walt Disney, who had his, I believe, his head frozen, right? Correct me if I'm wrong there. But people who have, you know, gone to great lengths to try to, quote unquote, live forever, right? You take like Futurama, where they have all the heads in jars, right? Like people who have, you know, who have lived, and now they, it's well into the future and they're still alive, right? So taking the physical self, taking what we have and how do we, you know, prolong that, the death of physical everything. When is it at some point we're not living in physical bodies, we're living in, you know, just, we take our consciousness, we take what we are as humans and put that into something else that will last forever, right? Put that into some other physical medium or move beyond that, right? And that's kind of getting a little too deep. But the reason I put this in there is because there were a lot of movies that came out. Do you remember that movie Transcendence with Johnny Depp?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yes. Yes. So I never watched that movie, but I, from the trailer, I'm pretty sure you basically get what happens, right? Like he basically transcends and becomes his, he leaves his physical body and, you know, enters into some other form. Correct me. Did you watch it, Jim?
Did not watch it, but I did see the trailer.
Yeah. So I think that's what most people did. The other one was Lucy. Did you see Lucy?
Uh-uh.
Oh, with Scarlett Johansson? Come on, man. You got to get on that ScarJo.
You're right. I do.
So that was from Luc Besson, right? Who did Leon the Professional and Fifth Element, right? And most recently, the Valerian and something of a Thousand Planets or something like that.
Right.
So he did that. And that was all about Scarlett Johansson gets basically ingest this drug that allows her to use 100% of her mental capacity, 100% of her brain. And it's got Morgan Freeman in there, and Morgan Freeman, you know, narrating as Morgan Freeman through a lot of the movie is a lot of fun. Talking about like what would happen if we were able to access, let's say, 100% of our brain and our intellectual power. And in the end, basically, she basically transcends and turns her knowledge and everything into a computer that they can access, I'm assuming, an interface at some point. But yeah, when she reaches 100%, she basically leaves her physical body. So I put physical self, and like I said, I'll put like a bunch of question marks after there. Do you guys think that'll happen at some point?
You know, I don't know if you're familiar with the book that will soon be turned into a movie. It's called Ready Player One. Are you familiar?
I didn't read the book, and I've seen the trailer, but I didn't read the book.
So quick thing about the book. It's actually my favorite book. It's kind of a love story and kind of a nerdy thing, and kind of it's a Willy Wonka meets The Matrix, and I really love it. Without getting too deep, basically it's about this guy who created this video game platform that turned into something way more. So it's called the Oasis, and it's the way that people interact with each other virtually. So you go, you know, it has like virtual schools which you attend. Like it's like real life, just virtual reality. And so basically no one has really human contact. Like it's just everyone is online, and that's where everyone hangs out. That's what everyone does, and that's just kind of your life. Like you have haptic feedback suits, you have computers and all that stuff. And so unless we really, I think, become the human beings that we want to be, like I was saying earlier with about, you know, we can be superhumans or whatever, unless we become those people and kind of embody that idea of being all that we can be, I think we will move into a virtual platform where our actual physical self that takes up space can't achieve those things. And we'll move into a place where we can. And, you know, we can abolish our insecurities and we can abolish, you know, those kind of nerdy quirks that we have about ourselves, which is why people really pay attention to their digital profile more so than their actual physical self in the real world, because you know that you can kind of be whoever you want. And so that's kind of what that book talks about. So I think if we were to die of the physical self, we would take a footprint, if you will, in virtual reality.
Yeah, so, and that's funny because virtual reality is kind of like coming around the corner, right? So yeah, so there was also a horrible movie that Bruce Willis was in called Surrogates.
Yes.
Did you see that movie?
It was so bad.
It was really bad.
There was nothing about that was good.
Yeah, no, I know, right? I'm trying to think. I'm like, well, Rosamund Pike was in it, but even that wasn't good. Like,
and it had so much promise too. Like, I was like, oh, what an interesting like idea, and then it was just bad.
Yeah, it very much plays off that whole thing. It's like, why did this turn into a Bruce Willis action movie?
Right.
You know, come on.
You can do better.
Yeah, do better, Bruce Willis.
Yeah, that could have been a cool thing, and then it wasn't.
So someday, I think, is the answer.
Yes.
Who knows when, but someday.
I think it's totally possible we could get to a point where, essentially, you probably both remember the old game Second Life. You know, it kind of reminds me of something like that. You know, where we're essentially all living in some VR, AR-esque world, and I think someday we could get there. I don't see it in the short term, but we could definitely talk about that for I think hours. But it's something that we might in the future, if there's enough interest, do a whole show on it.
Oh damn, Jim just popped in like the island in in the outline, and I'm like, oh, that Michael Bay movie?
That Michael Bay movie, yes.
Also ScarJo, yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, that one was weird in the sense that everything was still physical, right? But you just had another copy walking around, right? Just as
right
in the whole struggle to live forever, right? Like, oh, my kidneys went bad and there's not a donor. Oh wait, no, I grew a donor a while ago. Michael Bay told me to.
Don't worry about it, it's fine. And that goes in that whole idea of if you have a copy of your, like an exact copy of yourself, but because this kind of gets into the ethics idea of it, where if you have an exact copy of yourself, and if you really want to talk in terms of a person having a soul, that copy of yourself, it wouldn't have a soul. It's just a copy of your DNA. And so you can do all the genetic engineering you want to that soulless carbon copy of yourself so that if you did need replacement kidneys, it would be without the genetic mutation that's killing you.
So I want RAID 1, but I want to be able to RAID 1 on myself. But I want to be able to fix all the stuff that's wrong. So maybe not an exact mirror, you know, like RAID, you know, 12.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
Cool. Well, I guess that's has got to pretty much do it for this week in terms of the death of physically everything. Wrapping up, I did see there was some interesting stuff this week in the news. AIM is dead, or the old AOL Instant Messenger. Any
Who says AIM? Did you really say AIM?
Yes, I just did.
It's AIM. Oh, it's AIM. Everyone said AIM. So the death of everything physical. Oh, and the death of AIM, you know?
It's AIM, I heard.
What?
I heard it's AIM.
I'm a 90s kid. It'll always be AIM.
What was it? It was about 10 seconds ago. I heard it's actually pronounced AIM. So.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so pour one out for AOL Instant Messenger, because
if I recall correctly, it goes offline in December.
Yeah, yeah. There's a nice little tribute they have to AIM. AOL Instant Messenger. Yeah. My wife is even like texting me from the other room. She's like, yeah, it's AIM. You're an asshole. Like, thanks. I love you too. But actually, it's nice having a fact checker, you know, so thank you to my wife. But okay, fine. I'll admit when I'm wrong. So AIM is dead. Any kind words? I'm going to pour one out for AOL Instant Messenger because I use that a lot.
Oh, yeah. I definitely used it a lot. It was well used, and it was kind of like the OG of text messaging before it was actually at a rate that I felt like I could do that with my friends and not cause my parents to have a heart attack about their cell phone bill.
So yeah, boy, I used AIM so much when I was younger. That was my way of communicating with everybody. Like, I didn't even talk on the phone. Like, who needed a phone when I had AIM?
Yeah, your parents didn't have to hear your conversations that you were having on AIM.
Yeah, all they heard was the ding ding ding, like, of the notifications coming in and out, and That was crazy, and it was also awesome that you could have like 10 windows open and you could group chat It was pretty sweet.
Custom like away messages and marking yourself as away even though you're there. So many good things. And what happened? Like, those were the good times, you know?
Yeah, AIM was really like the gateway to a lot of great like messaging platforms that we have now.
Yep. It's what they could have been, right? Or it's what it was the OG for instant messaging. It set the bar for how to be an instant messenger at the time.
So kind of another interesting thing that's dying this year is MP3 is dying a slow death. And boy, was that was the media player, man.
Well, MP3, you're talking about the file format, yeah?
Yeah, file format.
Yeah, is it really dying, or is it just kind of it's finally able to like be used by anybody without any like royalties or anything?
Licensing fees. Yeah, that's what I thought it was. I thought the patent had just expired and they're like, okay, yeah, like, you know, we're not going to renew this patent anymore. So basically anyone can use MP3s, you know, like that was the whole thing with Linux, right? Linux couldn't bundle like the stuff to decode MP3s because it was, you had to pay for the license.
I mean, don't get me wrong, Jim, you're totally right. Like MP3 is dying a slow death. It is not probably the most popular anymore. There are so many other formats that are kind of come online that I think MP3 is definitely taking a backseat probably if we think about like everything, but it's definitely going to trail off over many, many, many years because of how popular it was.
Well, we do this in AAC, right? So, I mean.
No, our show's an MP3.
Oh, okay. Well.
Yeah, they're behind that curtain. You're like, oh, what the crap? It's MP3?
Well, never mind. MP3 is alive and well, people. Just
it's not dying. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, it kind of is. I mean, well, okay, whatever. Fine then.
Real-time follow-up from the guy that edits the show.
Yeah. I mean, I do it because, you know, that's the most accessible format, you know.
In 3 years, when MP3 is dead, I'll bring this up again.
There we go. Follow up from 3 years ago.
It has finally died. Jim was on to something.
Pour one out for MP3.
All right, guys. Well, it's been a good week. It's good to be back. And I look forward to chatting again next week.
Sounds good.
Absolutely.
All right, well, we will see you next week, guys.
Goodbye.
Oh yeah, the AOL Instant Messenger. Goodbye. I got that reference.
Adam, I really hope you don't cut that. Just like let it go all the way out that extra second or two and then get Jim's goodbye.
Yeah, man. So I'm kind of disappointed that I was wrong about the AOL Instant Messenger thing, but you know.
Oh, I don't feel bad for you.
I know you don't.
If it makes you feel any better, I still call it AIM. I never knew it was AIM either. Like, it's always in forever of time that it's existed has been AIM.
Yeah, so maybe it's just the cool kids say AIM, you know?
I mean, you and I do play guitar, so.
Yeah, that immediately makes us cool kids, you know?
I really like how the sort of interactions we have that between Adam and James, there's like no hostility. And between me and Adam, there's like, we're just very firm with each other.
I just told you, like, I was like, I'm like, I don't like Lou, you know, like we have a business relationship and that's about it, you know?